You're listening to episode 121 of Flick Fights, the official podcast of FlickChart.com. Hello, Flick Charters, and welcome to Flick Fights, the official Flick Chart podcast. I'm your host, Nathan Chase.
I'm Eric Blythe.
And I'm Lou Secchi.
And it's time to discover which films are the best of all time through movie matchups, two at a time, head to head. And as we decide the winners, our chart grows and better reflects our collective taste in movies. If you're not familiar with Flick Chart, head over to flickchart.com. Sign up for a free account and start ranking movies. On this episode, we have special guest Wade McCormick from Kansas City, Missouri. And he goes by Dr. Wade 42 on Flickchart. Wade has over 97,000 rankings and 1,518 movies ranked on his chart to date. Wade's current top five movies are Black Swan, There Will Be Blood, Pan's Labyrinth, Psycho, and at number one, The Silence of the Lambs. So, Wade, let's start things off by you telling us about one of your earliest memories of going to the movies.
I know the first movie I think I ever saw in theaters was Mulan, but I was like two and got scared. So this is just from what my parents have told me.
Okay.
First one I actually remember seeing is, I think it was Recess School's Out when I was like five. In 2001.
Recess School's Out?
School's Out, yeah, based on the TV show, I think.
Okay. Awesome. And was it just something that your parents took you to see and you have a fond memory of it, or it was just kind of an okay movie? It's kind of...
That's the first one I remember going to. The one I remember getting like excited about to go see was Revenge of the Sith.
Okay. And how does Revenge of the Sith... pair in comparison to some of the other Star Wars films?
It is at number five, I think. So after the original three and then Force Awakens.
Okay. I'll buy
That's fair. Yeah.
Awesome.
It's my top of the prequels, but still not good.
Gotcha. All right. Well, as usual, we like to get right into the debates on Flick Fights. So we'll talk more with Wade after we duel it out in the Thunderdome.
Two men. Hand to hand. No jury, no appeal, no parole. Two men enter, one man leaves.
Weapons?
Anything is possible. Chance decides.
Thunderdome. How do I get in there?
That's easy. Pick a fight.
Okay, to start things off, we've got a couple sequels. We've got Transformers Revenge of the Fallen from 2009 up against Austin Powers in Goldmember.
Oh, no.
Which I believe was the third film in the Austin Powers. Is that correct?
Yes, it is. Yep.
And then the Revenge of the Fallen, also the third Transformers film.
I was about to ask, is this the one where you've got the shiny spiky robot wrestling the shiny spiky robot, or is that the other one?
Yeah.
I haven't seen it, but I think you may be right on that.
You remember the 2001 episode? Do you remember that episode of Flick Lights?
Yeah.
Okay.
Yeah.
I'm going to try to make any rants I do about Transformers a little bit shorter than that. But Michael Bay. I don't even think that if there is a God, I don't know that God himself has an ego the size of Michael Bay's. If you've listened to the commentary on any of his movies, it's almost worth doing just to experience. Like, you can feel the room getting smaller. Like, you don't fit in the room anymore because his ego is coming out of the screen into your living room and pushing you out. It's crazy. And the Transformers, for me, growing up in the 80s, you had Star Wars, G.I. Joe, and Transformers. That was your world. You didn't have video games, not quite yet. You didn't have VHS players. Those were right around the corner. But you had these toys, and that was your social life. That was your social networking, the cartoons and all that. And then Michael Bay had to just go and crap all over my childhood. Say what you will about George Lucas violating your childhood and stuff. But man, Michael Bay, don't even talk to me about George Lucas. Okay.
Well, now we're okay. So Revenge of the Fallen is the second Transformers movie. So
is it the second one?
The first bad Transformers movie.
Okay. So this was the one where you had Jetfire, in the bad mock-up of the Air and Space Museum, the annex at near Dulles Airport, which is not at all what it actually looks like in the film. Mm-hmm. And then Jetfire somehow becomes armor for Optimus Prime. So the only Transformer in the movie that you could kind of make out amongst all the silver ones, because he had red and blue, is now also covered in silver as he's fighting other silver robots.
Right.
Yeah, I'm going to vote for what was the other movie?
Austin Powers in Gold Member.
Because at least that one had Mini-Me, and that one had Dr. Evil.
Yeah, and Goldmember's biggest claim to fame, I think, is Fat Bastard. That was the big character from that film.
For the third, okay, yep.
I wasn't impressed with
Fat Bastard. Beyonce Knowles was the femme fatale, and it's like full of just cameo after cameo after cameo. It's kind of just like they lost all steam that Austin Powers franchise ever had with that movie. But is it better, even though it's bad, is it better than the second Transformers movie?
Yes, mainly because there was a lot less Michael Bay in it.
Well, I mean, I enjoyed Goldmember. I mean, I can't really say I enjoyed Transformers, but you know, I watched it. And it didn't make me run screaming from the theater like it did Eric, but
right.
Yeah, I mean, I had more fun watching Goldmember. I mean, neither one of these movies are going to be cinematic masterpieces. You're right. I think Goldmember is definitely the downslide of the Austin Powers franchise. First two are pretty good. This one just didn't really connect.
Yeah, I agree with Lou. I like Austin Powers, all three of them, a lot. I think they're all really funny, but I haven't seen Transformers.
So. Gotcha. All right. Yeah, all right. Well, looks like Goldmember is going to beat Transformers Revenge of the Fallen. Next up, we've got Heat from 1995 up against Chasing Amy from 1997. Chasing Amy was one of the kind of first serious Kevin Smith movies, semi-serious, I guess. And Heat is Al Pacino and Robert De Niro and Val Kilmer and a crazy heist movie. Really, really good stuff. Can anybody put Chasing Amy above Heat here?
I want to. I thought Heat was really overrated. I thought it suffered from some pacing issues, but then so did Chasing Amy.
Yeah. Heat was the first time those two were on screen together, right?
I believe so, yes.
Yeah.
So there was a lot of hype about that, if I remember correctly, when that came out.
It's a Michael Mann movie. It
seemed like that was the big, like, it was all about the hype, though. Like,
yeah, exactly. It was really pushed that, hey, first time these two guys were on screen together, and it's going to be a momentous movie, and it was good. You know, it kind of fell short for me. It didn't really, you know, it wasn't all that to me. It wasn't like it was top of the list, so.
There's this scene where they're sitting there just talking to each other in a diner, and it's just like the tension is so thick, and just the dialogue and the body language, it's so good. And then just like one tiny scene amongst many.
But it was the one good tiny scene amongst a lot of, okay, this isn't bad. You know, it was a good movie, but it wasn't like phenomenal. It wasn't, I think it was really overrated. And that scene, don't get me wrong, that scene was great, but like that was the main memorable part of the film. Everything else about the film to me didn't really feel memorable at all. It was just like, okay, well, this, I don't regret watching it. I don't feel like I wasted my time, but I'm not going to write home about it either.
Hmm. Not even the heist scenes? You don't think those were memorable?
They were good, but
great car chases too.
Yeah.
Great.
Yeah, I really like Heat.
Gun scenes.
I haven't seen Chasing Amy, though.
The thing about Chasing Amy is it's another one of those things where I can think of maybe three or four scenes from Chasing Amy that really stood out and I thought were really good Kevin Smith moments. Some of them funny, some of them very serious. The funny one early on in the film, they're at a comic book convention and they're sitting in the audience and there's this guy presenting on one of the panels, this young black director, and he's going off on Star Wars and he's just tearing it apart about how racist it is. And, you know, Darth Vader, the black guy in the film, and everybody else in the film trilogy is white until you get to the second one. And then you got this token Lando Calrissian in here. And even then he's got to betray the heroes to Darth Vader. And then finally at the end of the film, when Darth Vader becomes a good guy again, you take his mask off and oh, it's a white guy underneath.
Yeah, that was good.
And just like totally getting worked up and going off. And then like somebody in the audience said something and he just starts screaming at the guy in the audience. And you find out afterwards, the guy's just like trolling the audience. But that was, that was a really good scene. That was a good Kevin Smith moment. There were some other moments later in the movie that actually were more dramatic that were really good. I can't say it's better than Heat, though. To me, these are both two very good movies that are a little bit better than average.
Mm-hmm.
But
it's weird. I don't, as listening to you describe that scene, I don't recall it at all. Like my memory of Chasing Amy is pretty minimal. Like I have, no problem recalling anything in Clerks. I remember pretty much everything about Mallrats, but then Chasing Amy, it's just like, it's kind of like blank for me. I don't really remember a whole lot other than it's kind of like a weird lesbian love triangle movie. And that's about it.
Right. I mean, like Eric said, neither one of these movies are, really something I'm going to remember forever. I think I've seen each one of these once. So I have a hard time choosing between them if you only see them once and they're not really stand out in your mind. But
I guess Heat's probably the better film. But
it's absolutely the better film for me. I'm a huge fan of Heat. I think it's great from top to bottom. Performances, the way it's shot, the sort of realness of all the scenes, like nothing seems like Hollywood phony. It seems like this is an actual group of people trying to pull this off and it doesn't work out. And that's how it should be. It just feels like it feels raw and it feels like you're there with everybody in the scenes. It's very good.
It definitely has a higher caliber cast.
Yeah, there's a ton of people in Heat. There's...
Has a young Natalie Portman in it.
Yeah, Natalie Portman.
I didn't realize it.
Danny Trejo's in it. Henry Rollins. Hank Azaria is in it. Ashley Judd. Tom Sizemore. John Voight. Val Kilmer that we discussed. Yeah, there's just a lot of people.
I forgot that most of those people you named were in it. I remember Natalie Portman and, of course, Val Kilmer, but...
Yeah.
All right. Well,
I'll go with you on that, Nathan. I'll go with Heat.
Awesome. Yeah. Heat is beating Chasing Amy. Okay, next up, we've got two comedies. We've got Dodgeball against Happy Gilmore. Happy Gilmore is Adam Sandler's golf movie, and Dodgeball is Ben Stiller and Vince Vaughn's Dodgeball movie. Both
two sports movies,
sports comedies, yes.
Yay.
My biggest memory of Happy Gilmore is Bob Barker saying,
I was going to say the same thing. Yeah.
Price is wrong, bitch.
Seeing him tackle him in the green was awesome.
That's about it though. That's about the only thing exactly. I can remember.
I can't think of anything else in that movie. He hits the ball a long way. He was a hockey player, wasn't he? Was that the deal?
Something like that.
Yeah. That's about all I remember from Happy Gilmore. Adam Sandler, I think we talked to him before being either hit or miss. This one just was not very memorable to me.
I think it was one of his more successful movies, but yeah.
I think so too, yeah. But just because it made a lot of money doesn't mean it's a great film.
Mm-hmm.
Dodgeball, on the other hand, a lot of memorable moments from that one. I did enjoy the movie. Stiller's character was pretty awesome as the gym owner and just a lot of quotable lines in the movie. Pretty funny script. I love it when they got the first tournament and they're their package got mixed up with somebody else's uniforms, and they had bondage uniforms.
Mm-hmm. That's right.
Yeah. That was hysterical. I mean, there was a lot of really funny parts in Dodgeball. Definitely underdog story. Definitely kind of see it coming, but as a comedy, I think it works better than Happy Gilmore.
Yeah, I really like Rip Torn in Dodgeball too. You know, if you can dodge a wrench, you can dodge a ball.
I used that line at work last week.
Great. Yeah, he's great. I would definitely pick Dodgeball.
Yeah, I've got to go Dodgeball on this one. It's just, I think a lot of the humor worked well, which I'm not a big Ben Stiller fan. But I like Dodgeball. Happy Gilmore to me was, I mean, Adam Sandler's very hit or miss and more misses than hits. I'd have to say probably my favorite Adam Sandler film is The Wedding Singer.
Yeah, absolutely.
Just Happy Gilmore just did not do it for me at all. So I'd definitely go Dodgeball here.
Yep, I think I will concur with the panel here. Dodgeball is going to beat Happy Gilmore. Okay, next up we've got Tropic Thunder up against Mary Poppins. Mary Poppins is a Disney movie that doesn't get a whole lot of nostalgia for, I think, these days. It's an older Disney film that has kind of just gone by the wayside a little bit. Although I did hear that they're making a sequel, a new sequel to Mary Poppins called Mary Poppins Returns, I believe. And it's going to have Emily Blunt playing the titular role.
Interesting.
But what do you guys think? Is it a good enough Disney classic to be considered a better movie than Tropic Thunder, which was sort of a strange comedy and kind of a hit in a way? It had some pretty outlandish characters. I don't know. What do you guys think?
You know, Ben Stiller is another one of those guys that's very hit or miss to me, and I know that he was responsible for most of the film, but for me, he was probably the least interesting part of the film.
Right.
But all of the other parts of the film I loved. Jack Black, Robert Downey Jr. In fact, Robert Downey Jr., I think, really, really, really made this film.
Wasn't he nominated for an Oscar for it?
Yes.
Really?
Yes.
I think he was.
Yeah, he was.
Interesting.
And rightfully so. It was, I mean, oh my gosh, it was an incredible performance. Again, I thought this was another movie where the humor really worked and the outlandishness of it fit. Mary Poppins, though, it's definitely a classic. I mean, it was one of the first Disney films to successfully integrate animation with real humans. Perhaps not at the same interaction level as something like Pete's Dragon, where it really relied on humans interacting with the animated characters. But it was still one of the early films to successfully do that. The music in Mary Poppins is still very memorable to this day.
Mm-hmm. Absolutely.
And it's honestly, I think this is kind of a tough choice.
You got supercalifragilisticexpialidocious. You've got Chim Chimmery. You've got
Spoonful of Sugar.
Spoonful of Sugar, yeah.
Yeah. There's some good stuff.
Julie Andrews is great in it.
I always think of, you don't go full retard. That's the quote that comes to mind from Tropic Thunder. And I also think of Tom Cruise and his crazy role in that movie. I wasn't that big of a fan of Tropic Thunder from front to back. Like, I think some of the humor works and some of it falls really, really flat. But I don't know. I think of these two movies, I think Mary Poppins is probably the stronger film overall. It's got a much more cohesive story and stronger characters, I think, overall.
Mm-hmm. And for me, it comes down to which one's going to last longer.
Yeah.
Mary Poppins has already lasted, you know, since, what, the 60s. And Tropic Thunder, I don't see it being memorable 10 years from now.
No, it won't be. Mary Poppins is definitely the film with the better longevity.
People still do talk about Tropic Thunder, though. They talk about Tom Cruise and Robert Downey Jr. in particular from that movie.
Yeah, but when you say they still talk about it, it's not even been 10 years.
Right.
So Mary Poppins, it's been, what, 60 years?
So, yeah, you guys were right that Robert Downey Jr. was nominated for Best Supporting Actor, but he lost to Heath Ledger for The Joker in Dark Knight.
Not surprising.
Yeah.
And frankly, I know I'm in the vast minority on this one, but I think Robert Downey Jr. should have gotten it.
Hmm. Interesting.
Yeah. But that's a whole nother show.
So yes. Are we all on the Mary Poppins side then? Sounds like we are.
Yeah, I'd go Mary Poppins.
I'm undecided enough that I'll concede that, yeah.
All right. Mary Poppins beats Tropic Thunder. Next up, we've got The Devil's Advocate against Young Frankenstein. Devil's Advocate was Keanu Reeves and Al Pacino from the late 90s. Pacino playing the devil. And I think a very young Charlize Theron is also in Devil's Advocate. And I think it was one of her first films, actually. And of course, Young Frankenstein is the late, great Gene Wilder. His big success, other than, say, Blazing Saddles and Willy Wonka. And you got Peter Boyle in the Frankenstein role. And yeah, it's a comedy powerhouse. Does anybody have fond enough memories of Devil's Advocate to say that it's a better film than Young Frankenstein?
Other than Pacino being ridiculously over the top in it and hilarious. Right. No, I don't think so.
Yeah, I mean, Pacino was excellent as the devil. I thought it was a great role for him. He made that movie.
He's still just being Pacino. Like,
yeah,
he's,
it wasn't a real stretch for him. I mean, not that he's evil, but it was a great role for him to be the devil. And I thought it was excellent watching him do that. And I mean, Keanu Reeves, yeah, whatever, you know, he was okay in the role. But I found it a very fun movie to watch. Now, it's not as good as Young Frankenstein, but I really do like Devil's Advocate. But yeah, Young Frankenstein, Gene Wilder, that was a great, great comedy.
Help me with these bags. All right, you take the blonde. I'll take the one in the turban. Oh, that's good. Good stuff. Eric, have you seen Devil's Advocate?
I've seen Devil's Advocate.
Yeah.
I remember parts of it. I thought it was okay.
It's really long.
Yeah.
Yeah, it was.
Definitely long. Drags a lot.
Yep.
Well, you should.
I thought it was great. The devil was part of, you know, big business.
You should definitely get on Young Frankenstein. It's
I really need to.
It's really, really funny. And even though it's, you know, it's black and white, but it's purposeful. It's supposed to mimic the style of the original Frankenstein films from the 30s. And
right.
It's just from top to bottom, just laugh after laugh after laugh. It's like Spaceballs or Blazing Saddles or, you know,
it's a classic Bill Brooks movie. I
mean, yeah, it's just awesome.
I think it's just one of those things where I've never happened across it. Like I just, mm-hmm. I always mean to see it, but then I always forget all about it until something like tonight comes up. And then I'm like, oh, I should go watch this, except I'm in a podcast right now.
Yeah. Well, we'll maybe after the show, we'll take tally on some of these things and get some homework going. But for now, it looks like Young Frankenstein is going to beat The Devil's Advocate. Next up, we've got Taxi Driver against Braveheart. Braveheart's really long.
And that's the really first long. Thing you say about it. That's not a good sign.
Yeah. And it's got flipped kilts. And yeah, it's nothing compared to Taxi Driver is what I would say. Taxi Driver's just menacing and mood and character study and seedy New York is almost a character in itself. It's just a masterful movie.
Mm-hmm. I would have to say the same thing. It did kind of get a bad rap after the whole Reagan shooting, but because
mm-hmm.
wasn't that what Hinckley was claiming?
Yeah.
Yeah. But no, yeah, great movie, great portrayals, you know, great actors in the roles. Definitely one of the movies in the 70s that I really did enjoy.
Yeah, I think De Niro, that's probably maybe the best performance ever.
Yeah.
And Jodie Foster's great as well.
Yeah, but Braveheart had Mel Gibson, and it had
blue face paint.
A bunch of other actors who were all
battle known. Scenes. You know? Yeah,
has some pretty epic battle scenes. Yeah, you
know, I remember seeing Braveheart. I saw Braveheart in a bus. That's where I saw it, like on a really long bus ride.
No wonder you don't like it.
Probably not the best place.
Great movie experience for it. Yeah.
So yeah,
Braveheart was good, but I hated the ending of it.
Yeah, I don't remember really just getting much out of it. It just felt overwrought and kind of just overstayed its welcome. So yeah, Taxi Driver is going to beat Braveheart. Okay, next up we've got Pirates of the Caribbean at World's End from 2007. This is the third Pirates film, up against Planes, Trains, and Automobiles from 1987. Steve Martin and John Candy.
Thank you, Nathan, for that very much needed clarification on which of the Pirates movies.
Yeah. Yeah, they all kind of run together for me.
And then there's all of the others as you're falling down the cliff. Planes, Trains, and Automobiles was really good.
Those aren't pillows.
Yeah. How about them bears? Yeah. Planes, Trains, and Automobiles, I thought was a fantastic comedy. I mean, you know, Steve Martin, John Candy. I mean, just his character as the, what was he, a shower curtain ring salesman?
Yeah.
Yeah. Amazing. I mean, he was the guy you definitely don't want to sit next to on a plane or anywhere else and just talking the whole time. I saw this the night before I fly back to college, my freshman year.
Wow.
And I was like, oh, I'm getting on a plane tomorrow. I should not have watched this movie. This is not a good thing. But yeah, I mean, what a fun ride that movie was, you know?
Yeah.
There's so many things in that movie that, you know, the whole on the highway, you're going the wrong way. How do they know where we're going? Yeah, you're drinking too much. There. Just so many good comedy scenes in this. Well written, well acted. And, you know, it had a good story at the end, too. So I really enjoyed Trains, Planes, and Automobiles, and I would definitely side with that one.
You know, Steve Martin and John Candy both are two of the best comedic actors to have come out of the 80s. Steve Martin gets a lot of respect. John Candy, probably not the level of respect I think he deserves. But when you think about it, the vast majority of John Candy's movies, I think were pretty good. The comedy worked pretty well. Even the ones that weren't great still had some charm to them.
Yeah, he's an actor where you wonder if he had, you know, lived on longer, that what kind of stuff he would have ended up doing.
Yeah.
He went way too soon.
The first Pirates movie, I really thoroughly enjoyed. Everyone since then, I've thought was abysmal. So I'm going to go with the Ask a Ninja review on this one. I'm going to say that for a Gore Verbinski film, there needed to be a lot more gore and a lot less Verbinski.
I haven't thought about Ask a Ninja in a long time.
Oh my gosh, that was the best movie review ever. And the whole thing, totally accurate. Like, the only thing that, like, if you were nobody in the first movie, you were a pirate in this movie. Everybody was a pirate. The only thing that this movie had more of than pirates were plot lines. Mm-hmm. Like, if you were a parrot, you got a plot line. If you were a fish, you got a plot line. If you were a boat, you got a plot line. Even the last scene of the film was a new plot line. Like you need to go back and watch that.
Just you saying it that way, it brings to mind that exact review. So that's funny. Yeah. I've purposely kind of just not seen the second and third Pirates movies just because I've never heard a single person say anything good about them. So why would I waste 2 or 4 hours of my life, you know, seeing something that everyone says is terrible.
Yeah.
I like the second one okay. But, yeah, the rest aren't very good.
The second one is...
That's one of Davy Jones.
Yeah, it's not as bad as all the other sequels.
It's like the Revenge of the Sith of Pirates of the Caribbean.
All right, so everybody's on the Planes, Trains, and Automobiles side, yes?
Oh, yes.
Yes.
Awesome. John Candy and Steve Martin take the win. Okay, next up we have Captain America, the First Avenger, against No Country for Old Men. So, First Avenger was the first time we got to see Steve Rogers, Captain America, with oh man,
his, Sharon Carter.
What's his name? I can't Chris remember Evans. The actor's name. Okay. Yes, Chris Evans.
Oh, Chris Evans.
First time Chris Evans playing that role, and it's sort of a period piece Marvel movie set in the 30s, I believe.
Think so.
And yeah, it's Joe Johnston, I believe, is the director of that movie. He's known as the Rocketeer director. He also directed Jurassic Park 3 and some other bad movies. But and then we've got No Country, which is kind of a powerhouse movie from the Coen brothers. One of their more serious movies. Javier Bardem playing incredibly menacing villain.
Yeah.
And Josh Brolin and Tommy Lee Jones. It's a Western, but it's a modern film also. So it's not a Western in the classic sense at all. It's sort of a modern thriller, and it's real scary in some regards, and very, very well a story that's unusually told and very mood heavy and very well shot. I think Roger Deakins was the cinematographer, if I can remember correctly. We got big popcorn Marvel movie against kind of an art house Western from the Coen brothers. So which of these is the better film?
I'm going to abstain. I've not seen No Country for Old Men, but I will say that as good a movie as I felt Captain America: The First Avenger was, I did not enjoy it very much. I don't like period films. So I was destined never to like this one. So either way, I'm going to sit this one out.
Chicken. you know, the Captain America movie, definitely good. It definitely pales against some of the other stuff that's come after it. So that kind of tarnishes. I know it shouldn't, but in my opinion, it makes it a little less of a film. But you know, still very enjoyable. Good roles, good part of the Marvel Cinematic Universe. You can't have the rest of it without this one, so it all plays and works well together. No Country for Old Men, though, I mean, just some great performances. You know, you mentioned, you know, Javier Bardem as a very menacing bad guy, and he was downright scary.
Yeah.
I mean, you know, the tools he used and how he did things, it was just fantastic. And you're right, the way it was shot was amazing. I mean, the look on screen was just really, really good.
Yeah, No Country for Old Men is definitely one of the Coen brothers' best movies. And I can't really begrudge the Academy for picking it over There Will Be Blood, which was in my top five.
Mm. Yeah, it's interesting that, you know, with most franchises, the first movie is generally regarded as the best of the franchise, but it seems like the Captain America series in particular has been improving on each iteration. So it's like we have the first Avenger, and then we have Winter Soldier, and then we have Civil War, and it's like it's sort of compounding on and sitting atop all of the pile of plot and story and characters that kind of have been built up with the Avengers and Iron Man and everything else, kind of just steadily making the films better.
Right. I mean, I think to Eric's point, being a period piece, it kind of took a step back from what we had been getting with the rest of the Marvel Cinematic Universe. You know, step back in time to kind of set the story to bring this up to current day. So it felt like a stutter step in the whole Marvel Cinematic Universe.
It probably would have been hard to tell an origin story without telling the origin, though. You know what I mean?
Exactly. Yeah. They had to do it that way, but I think it suffers because of that. Yeah.
And I think for having to do it that way, they did a good job with it. It doesn't change the fact that it didn't hold my interest, but they did a good job doing what they needed to do.
All right. Sounds like No Country for Old Men is going to beat Captain America: The First Avenger. Okay, we've got Shrek up against Ratatouille. Shrek was the first kind of big DreamWorks hit with Mike Myers as the ogre and Eddie Murphy as the donkey and Cameron Diaz and John Lithgow. And Ratatouille was kind of a a step down Pixar movie, I guess, for many. I really liked Ratatouille, but I think it's not well remembered in the Pixar canon.
Right. This is the first one that they had that people were kind of split on. Up until this point, everybody unanimously loved anything Pixar touched.
Mm-hmm.
And I think this was the first one where people were a little bit split.
I didn't even realize that was a Pixar movie. I mean, I never saw Ratatouille, but I didn't realize Pixar did. I knew it was Disney. But I had no desire to see a rat in a kitchen.
That was the issue for a lot of people.
It's worth it, though. It's really good, I think.
Is it?
Yeah. I think so, yeah.
See, it's one of the more emotionally powerful Pixar movies, I think. It's got something to it where I don't know. You kind of you are able to get into the psyche of the characters more. Like it's much more of a character study. It's not so much like a fantasy thing. Like, you know, it's not fish and toys and bugs and monsters. It's not. It's just like a small setting. It's, you know, a single restaurant in France, and the characters happen to be rats, and that's it. And it's just very, I think because of its size like that, it's able to tell its story more concisely and in a way that's more engaging to me anyway.
I can't dispute any of that. I just didn't care about the story nor the characters. I didn't have the whole rat in the kitchen problem that I know a lot of people did, but this was probably for me the first Pixar movie that for which I felt apathetic. It wasn't a bad movie. It was a good movie.
Right.
I just didn't connect with it.
Now, what about Shrek, though? It's hard to disassociate yourself with the sequels and think about just the original film.
But you have to do that. And if you do that, Shrek really wasn't bad. It was something that at that point hadn't been done before. I mean, we're sick of it now, but the first Shrek film was something that was kind of a unique take on the fairy tale thing.
Mm-hmm.
And I thought it was done well. I think that Mike Myers did a really good job. I think Eddie Murphy did a good job.
It was full of a lot of direct sort of innuendo kind of things directed specifically towards Disney to say, you know, like, this is how Disney would do it. And we're going the opposite direction kind of thing and sort of making fun of just the Disney aesthetic and kind of trying to be the antithesis of that.
Well, you could also argue that it was going against traditional fairy tales as well, which, of course, is also Disney. But the characters were memorable. It told a story that had a point and that you kind of cared about while you were watching it. Shrek was not a bad movie. In fact, Shrek was a good movie, whether you're sick of seeing it by now or not. Looking at it objectively, the reason that it did so well, the reason kids loved it and that it's gotten, you know, all of these horrific sequels, it's because the first one was really good. So I'm going to go Shrek in this case. I can't believe I'm saying that.
Mm-hmm.
I really like Shrek too, but I think I'd go with Ratatouille here. I really like Brad Bird.
Yeah. I think I'm going to give it to Ratatouille because I think it doesn't get enough love.
I'm curious, though, before you click on anything, I'd like to, out of curiosity, knowing that Ratatouille won, I'd like to know what the globals are.
Yeah, I'm going to guess that Shrek will probably win out, but I could be wrong because some people have just a strong enough Pixar love that it pushes it up for
them.
And
even a bad Pixar movie is generally good. So.
Right. All right, so Ratatouille is sitting at 660 and Shrek is sitting at 735. So, Ratatouille wins.
Pretty close.
There you go.
Pretty close, yeah. Interesting that the original Shrek doesn't rank higher, but it's probably because people lump it into the rest of the junk franchise that it's become at this point.
It is hard. Yeah. It's hard to separate it from what it's become collectively.
Mm-hmm. Yep. All right. Ratatouille will beat Shrek.
Please, can we just stop and think about this?
Tell him to put the gun down. Look,
Look, Lizzie, she's going to change. You know I'm right. And when she does, she'll come back and she'll kill all of us. That's what your ex can't seem to realize.
That's what this is about, isn't it? He doesn't like me. He's always hated me and now he wants to shoot my mom.
She's not.
You never thought I deserved her, that I was good enough.
What are you talking about?
Oh, come on. We all know you're in love with Liz.
That is not true.
Yes, it is.
That is not true.
Yes, it is.
What?
I know you only hung out with me at college to get close to Liz, and when she knocked you back, I was there to pick up the pieces. I've come to terms with that, Das. Why can't you?
Lizzie, I want you to know that my feelings for you have always been essentially...
David, please, there are slightly more pressing matters at hand here.
Yeah, like the fact that Daphs is pointing a gun at my mum.
I'm not the one who's being unreasonable, Pico.
For Christ's sake, she's not dead.
She's finished. For a hero, you're quite a hypocrite.
You're the one that's gone from being a chartered accountant to Charlton Heston.
I'm not a chartered accountant.
Well, you look like one.
Yeah. I'm a lecturer.
You're a twat.
Yeah. She's not your mum anymore. In a minute, she'll be just another zombie.
Don't say that! We're not using the Zed word!
Please, can we just calm the fuck down? Now.
All right. It is time for our title fight. And on this episode, we are going to be adding Shaun of the Dead.
All right.
This is Edgar Wright's zombie comedy with... all of the sort of Edgar Wright mainstays. We've got Simon Pegg
and Nick Frost.
Yep. And it's a very, very visually interesting movie. I think it shows off a lot of Edgar Wright's skill in terms of the way that he tells stories with film and the way that he paces things and edits things together. And it's a movie where you can watch it two or three or four times and see something new every time that that you wouldn't have caught the first time around. What do you guys think of Shaun of the Dead?
Well, you got to remember, there is no I in team, but there is an I in meat pie. And meat is an anagram of team or something. I don't know. Somebody told me that once. It's a great movie. It's like you said, the editing is phenomenal. This is really, I think, the first... of the films that like really opened things up for Simon Pegg and Nick Frost. I know they had, was it Spaced or something? There's a TV series they had in the UK. I've never seen it, but yeah, I mean, everything about this movie was just spot on. My wife hates this movie. She loves, now my mind's blank. The second film.
Hot Fuzz?
Yeah. She loves Hot Fuzz, which I didn't care for quite as much. I thought Shaun of the Dead was definitely just like perfection for a zombie movie. And I'm not into zombie movies, but it was that the humor worked, the editing, the pacing were all great. The characters were real. Like they felt like you could feel for these characters and you could kind of feel what it would be like in that scenario.
And in the same respect, there are moments where it kind of completely purposefully takes you out of the film.
Yeah.
Like there's the scene where they're all in a line and they meet up with this other group of people and they're exact mirror opposites of each other, all wearing like the same kind of outfit.
Right.
And it's like, it, just little things like that, where it's like, it's such a like nod, wink, wink to the audience that it's over the top funny just because of the scene. And they play it all completely straight, but it works just from a visual gag alone. And it's, There's stuff like that throughout the movie, though, that, you know, it's like the thing that makes it smart, I think, is that it makes the audience feel clever and makes it like as you're watching it, you feel like you're completely a step ahead of the characters and what they're going through. And so it's sort of that, it gives you that feeling of, you know, laughing at them going through stuff because you're always seeing what they're going to be putting themselves into.
My only problem with the movie is it's like two thirds of a movie. The first two thirds are fantastic. The last third didn't really do much for me.
How dare you?
I'm sorry. It just didn't finish for me. I don't know. It seemed like it lost all its steam. The comedy kind of fell apart. It didn't really have a satisfying ending for me.
Yeah, it's difficult to do a resolution and make it like... because it's not a horror movie in a strict sense where, you know, everybody dies except for the protagonist. It's kind of has to go a completely different direction because it's more comedy and more of like a bromance drama, really, when it comes down to it.
Oh, yeah. Right. Yeah.
And they have a lot of fun with the main characters that die.
Yeah.
All right. Well, let's go ahead and put it up against some of the other movies on the chart and see how it fares then. So the first movie that it's up against is King Kong from 2005. This is Peter Jackson's Kong.
Other than the pacing, I really liked King Kong. Yeah. I would definitely have to go Shaun of the Dead here, though.
Yeah, absolutely. Shaun of the Dead for me.
Yeah, I'd agree. Mm-hmm.
Same here.
All right. Shaun of the Dead beats Kong. Now we've got Shaun of the Dead up against Misery.
Hmm.
I really enjoyed Misery.
Yeah, Misery was a tight
great
film.
Movie. Almost did the book justice. But yeah, I would definitely pick Misery over Shaun of the Dead. The sense of dread that you had for the main character in the bed, living in that misery, was just amazing. So I would definitely do it over Shaun of the Dead.
Now, see, I think I would still pick Shaun of the Dead here. And I enjoyed Misery, both the book and the movie. And It's probably one of the closest adaptations of a King book ever on film. But Shaun of the Dead, I think, was more fun. As the craftsmanship of the movie, I think, was better.
Yeah.
Really? A comedy was more fun than Misery? Really?
It was shocking. But you also kind of felt like, you felt like the heroes were in danger too. So it was a comedy and it was a horror movie at the same time.
Yeah, Misery is probably my favorite Stephen King adaptation. Rob Reiner did a great job with it, but I think I'd still have to go with Shaun of the Dead.
Yeah, I think I'll do Shaun of the Dead as well. Just from a visual standpoint and from a editorial standpoint, it's a stronger movie.
Okay.
Shaun of the Dead will beat Misery. Now we got Shaun of the Dead up against Dread, an excellent modern action film.
Yeah, it doesn't get enough credit. But again, I think Shaun of the Dead's better.
I've not seen Dread.
Definitely worth checking out.
Yeah,
Dread is really good.
I've heard a lot of good things.
Yeah.
Lou?
Yeah. As much as I like Dread, I would say I'd pick Shaun of the Dead here.
All right. Shaun of the Dead will beat Dread. Hellboy, always the loser in these.
Shaun of the Dead
editions.
That's probably going to be the case again.
Poor Hellboy.
Yeah, I do like Hellboy though.
Shaun of the Dead beats Hellboy. Okay, Wizard of Oz. Again, the movie that it comes up against, and
I hate everything that comes up against this movie.
Yeah,
because right. It's like, I will almost always want to pick whatever the other film is because I'm not a big fan of older films, but there are a lot of them where Wizard of Oz is just a better film. That being said, I really kind of want to go Shaun of the Dead here.
I'm with you on Shaun of the Dead.
I mean, I would usually go for the newer film in this case, but Wizard of Oz is a really good movie.
Yeah,
it is.
It was menacing. It had fantasy. It was, I'd go Wizard of Oz over Shaun of the Dead.
Yeah, this is a tough one.
I can't with this one. I think Shaun of the Dead is a better crafted film.
Oh, I can't. Just because it's a genre
that's not as popular.
I mean, did Shaun of the Dead inspire a Broadway musical?
Like I said, it's not as popular. Yeah. But I'm not here to cater to what's popular.
I think I'll go Wizard of Oz. So that puts us at a crossroads. And
a tie.
I imagine Wizard of Oz is going to beat Shaun of the Dead, but I could be wrong. Any guess as to which one's going to be up on top?
I thought Wizard of Oz was really high, if I remember.
I think Wizard of Oz is going to take it in the globals.
Yeah. All right. 112 to 160. Not that far off.
Thought, yeah.
Oz will beat it, but just by a few.
I'm surprised Shaun of the Dead is that high up.
Yeah, yeah, up in the top 200 there. That's no slouch there, Shaun of the Dead. But Wizard of Oz is going to beat you. Just barely. Okay, now we're going to Shaun of the Dead against The Thing.
Oh.
A horror comedy against one of the best horror.
Yeah.
Ever.
I'm going Shaun of the Dead.
I'm going
again,
The Thing.
I mean, The Thing was awesome, and it had one. I can't say that. Like, it, there was one thing that, no pun intended.
That's
Shaun
all you
of
need
the Dead had
thing.
More going on, I feel like, whereas The Thing had the same thing going on through the whole film, and it was done really well. I like Shaun of the Dead better.
These are both great films. There's no
absolutely,
doubt about
yeah.
it. But The Thing is masterful in ways that Shaun of the Dead would strive and hope to be. I think.
I know. Yeah, but Shaun of the Dead was masterful in a lot of ways, too. And it's hard.
It's
comedy
very good.
Is always hard to do because everybody yeah. has a different sense of humor. And what's funny to one person isn't going to be funny to someone else. Mm-hmm. So for it to succeed as a comedy, but then also in an entirely different genre at the same time, is kind of tricky. And it pulls it off masterfully, I think. And again, not I can't say anything bad about The Thing. But I know The Thing's going to win, and I can't get very upset about that.
Well, what do you say, Wade?
Yeah, I think I'd have to go with The Thing. I do love both a lot, but The Thing's got to win here.
All right. The Thing beats Shaun of the Dead. And now we got Shaun of the Dead up against John Wick. Another fantastic action film from the past few years. This is a toughie. Now, it's funny because, you know, you look at Wizard of Oz against Shaun of the Dead, and then you look at John Wick against Shaun of the Dead, and it seems like John Wick, if John Wick is not going to beat Shaun of the Dead, I don't know.
Okay, so John Wick is a phenomenal, adrenaline-filled action film, but Shaun of the Dead, I think, has a level of heart to it that... John Wick doesn't have.
It's true.
I feel like Shaun of the Dead has more levels.
It's all about his dog, man. Come on.
Yeah. Yeah.
It does.
I think John Wick has better world building, I think, than Shaun of the Dead. Shaun of the Dead is kind of just, it doesn't have much outside of the insular area that the story's taking place. Like it doesn't feel like a bigger thing. Whereas John Wick feels like it's full of history, full of other things that have happened to John Wick. The hotel True. Has this whole rich history behind it, and it feels like a lived in place with all kinds of stuff that's happened.
Right. Yeah, that's just to say the backstory of John Wick that we don't know felt like we knew it. You know, it felt like you were already in place in that world. And then getting the stuff about the hotel that was this kind of mysterious other world that we know nothing about. And we didn't feel like we had to know more about it. We
it
got enough
like,
to, satisfy us in the movie.
Right.
Most movies can't do that.
It was written like it's a sequel where you don't have to watch the first film.
Right.
Yeah.
Yeah.
I mean, most movies that give you a little bit of stuff. And you're like, oh, what? Tell me more about that. I never had that feeling in this movie.
It's an incredible feat to be able to put that much into what's essentially just a short run of the mill action film and make it succeed. And it's like they took a B movie action movie and made it into like an art film. Like it elevated way beyond where it should have been. And
the fight choreography was incredible.
Yeah. Although there is some good fight choreography in Shaun of the Dead too.
That's what I was just going to say, that I like John Wick a lot, but I think my favorite action scene is from both of these is from Shaun of the Dead, where they're fighting to Don't Stop Me Now.
Yeah. Yeah, that whole sequence is really, really good.
I'd go Shaun of the Dead here.
It's close for me because I love John Wick, but I think that I would probably go Shaun of the Dead. Again, I feel like it succeeds on a lot of different levels, whereas John Wick is nearly perfect, but just doesn't have quite the same level of depth. What you said about world building notwithstanding.
I'll go John Wick on this one.
Yeah. Yep. I'm with you,
Lou. We're gonna go to the globals, and I feel like we're gonna lose, but
yeah. But let's give it to John Wick in solidarity and let him lose with some some peace there. Ooh, but yeah,
bad in the global.
Yeah, it's new. You know, it's got 10 years. Shaun of the Dead's got 10 years on it. So John Wick's down at 1,188.
I can see it rising up, though.
Yeah, I think so. I think as John Wick grows in popularity, and when the sequel hits, maybe it'll draw more people to the original as well and get more people seeing it.
Yeah. Right. It's definitely had a very good outing in the theaters when it came out. Mm-hmm. So,
yeah. All right. Shaun of the Dead will beat John Wick. And now we got Shaun of the Dead against Dumb and Dumber.
Mm.
I'll take the horror comedy over the regular comedy.
Yeah, I really enjoy Dumb and Dumber, but there's a difference between how much you enjoy a film and whether or not the film is good. And I believe Dumb and Dumber is good, but it's not as high quality as Shaun of the Dead. The craftsmanship of Shaun of the Dead is far superior.
I don't know. I mean, Dumb and Dumber, first of all, was a whole movie versus two-thirds of a movie.
Oh, come on.
And, the comedy was good throughout. It doesn't have any – it's not like it's doing two genres like Shaun of the Dead did, but there's so many quotable lines from Dumb and Dumber. I've got to lean on that side.
I actually haven't seen Dumb and Dumber.
Hmm.
But it's still just – I mean – it's like fart jokes brought to a whole new level, which is good. It's impressive.
There was only one fart joke in the movie. Come on.
Well, diarrhea, I guess, is a
pretty good
farting,
fart joke, by the way. But
yeah. Shaun of the... come on. Shaun of the Dead is way
rocky
better.
Than this. Yeah. We had John Denver's full up.
All right. So, Eric, you're on Shaun of the Dead.
Absolutely.
Yes? All right. So, Shaun of the Dead's going to beat Dumb and Dumber.
Damn it.
And now it's number 14 on the chart. Not too bad. Yeah. Sitting between Dumb and Dumber and The Thing.
Okay.
Yeah, that makes sense, right? It's we got a horror movie above it and a comedy movie below it. And we got a horror comedy in the middle there.
Perfect. Very fitting.
There you go. Bridging the gap.
Bridging the transition.
Gap. So what's our top 10 look like right now?
Let's see. Top 10 is... let's find out. We've got Blade Runner, Back to the Future, Ghostbusters, Force Awakens, Alien, Raiders of the Lost Ark, Willy Wonka and the Chocolate Factory, Pulp Fiction, Wizard of Oz, and WALL-E. Mm. There's some good stuff in there.
Yeah.
Maybe rearranged a little bit, but
WALL-E is the only one that I feel like probably needs to move down.
Which one?
Yeah. WALL-E.
WALL-E.
Yeah.
It makes sense. It's on the bottom end of that, so.
Yeah.
But it's getting there. It's
you have to keep in mind, we've still only been doing this. We only rank once a week.
Yep.
And we've only been doing this for how many episodes now? So this is still considered a very young list.
Early days, yeah. Yes. There's 302 movies on the chart and 326 rankings. So
yeah.
Most of these movies have only gotten a few chances to move around so far. So
yeah.
Just keep that in mind. All right. Well, Wade, we've got a couple of questions for you before we head out. The first question I like to ask our guests is, how did you originally happen to come across Flickchart?
I was looking through a Reddit thread about a year ago. I was asking like what websites you use to keep track of like the movies you've seen and rate them. And one of them was Flickchart. Oh, and okay. So I went to Flickchart and was like just instantly hooked.
Awesome. Yeah. Yeah, we had some interesting issues with Reddit. The sort of the fact that you can't self-promote on Reddit makes things a little bit tricky for any, you know, sites like ours where, you know, if in order to gain popularity, you have to sort of get the word out, but you can't get the word out because people consider that self-promotion. So it just ended up being difficult to use Reddit in any way to help further Flickchart. But every once in a while, either, one of us or one of our users will chime in for us and kind of let people know that it exists. And for reasons like that, for people that are looking for a tool to help them with their movie watching and ranking and everything.
Whenever I see a thread like that, I'll always promote Flickchart.
Awesome. And then the other question would be, if you could recommend one lesser known movie that you think everyone should see, what would it be?
Probably a 2010 movie called, I believe it's Incendies. It's spelled Incendies. The director is Denis Villeneuve, who a lot of people probably know from Sicario and Prisoners that came out in the last couple of years. Both are excellent. Incendies is about these twins' mother dies, and she leaves them a will to take a letter. One of them takes a letter to the brother. One takes a letter to the father. They have to go back home to the Middle East and deliver letters. And the way, like, you know, all the secrets of the family are unveiled is really cool. It's like kind of like a Greek tragedy almost. Hmm. And I think it's probably his best movie.
And that's his first feature film, right?
I think he had a few others before it. It's his first, like,
first Hollywood
big one.
Movie.
It was nominated for, I think, best foreign film at the Oscars that year.
Hmm. Awesome. Well, cool. Well, that's all the time that we have for this episode of Flick Fights, but you can follow our chart's progress and send us a friend request to Flick Fights on Flick Chart. And you can follow us over on Twitter at Flick Fights. And if you'd like to be a future guest or you want to send us feedback about the show, please do by sending us an email to flickfights@flickchart.com. I'd like to thank our guest, Wade McCormick, for joining us on the show. Thanks a lot, Wade.
Thanks for having me.
And from all of us at Flick Fights, thanks for listening, and we'll talk to you soon.